This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I have recently started a new video podcast that some of you might be interested in. It's called The Magic Whisper, which is a division of The Magic Word. Specifically, this is geared to just give you a little bit of behind the scenes and some upcoming things that are happening on The Magic Word. It's kind of a video pod letter. Since I send out a pod letter each week anyhow, it is more than just what that is, let me just say. It will give you a clip of some people who are coming up the following week. It also will let you know some current news. The idea of the Whisper is to just kind of give you some information that I haven't had a chance to talk about during the podcast, and in particular to talk about some topical things, which is not really the intent of the Magic Word Podcast. The Magic Word Podcast is intended to have conversations with conjurers that will be just as relevant 20 years from now, hopefully, as they are today. Whereas the Magic Whisper is something in which, if we are wanting to report about something that just happened recently in magic news you might be interested in, or something that everyone happens to be talking about, then we'll discuss that then a little bit then as well. Anyhow, it's just a short thing over on YouTube. You can go to Texas Magician, or look up Scott Wells on YouTube, and you can view that. It's less than 10 minutes long, and it's going to be just each week with just me giving a couple of updates with some pictures. And if you wish to participate, please do, because I will play your audio if you post something on SpeakPipe, which is a little app we have here on the website, the Magic Word Podcast, or if you send in a text, or if you respond in the comment line of the YouTube video, then I'll read those out then too. And also, I'm looking for pictures of you that might have your finger next to your lips as if you're whispering or saying, shh. Well, enough of that. Go check it out, The Magic Whisper. Also, I want to encourage you to enter the contest for one of two free autographed books that Dr. Richard Wiseman is giving away. If you go to themagicwordpodcast.com for last week or this week's episode, you'll see a form there that you just put in your email address and your name, and it will automatically get generated into my spreadsheet, and then next week I'll have a random selection of the winners' names. And you will receive a free book, Compliments of Richard, postpaid wherever you are in the world. So therefore, this is open to any and everybody. So please register. Don't register often, just register once. Please just register your one name. I don't care how many emails you use, whichever one you have, just use the one and not more. But again, this is a call for one of the last opportunities here for this last week while we're running the contest for Magic Your Mind Happy by Richard Wiseman. This week's episode is going to be with a friend of mine, Cody Clark, someone I see each year at the Magi Fest in Columbus, Ohio. And he and I have talked about getting together, but we haven't. And so he is someone who is on the spectrum of autism and is a successful magician and travels around the country doing library shows and other kinds of things. I'm not going to give away too much of his CV because we talk about that as I introduce him here this week. I think it's important that we hear from everyone across the spectrum of our wide, wide magic world to help encourage and inspire others who might have some disabilities that some people see as disabilities, but their abilities to others. So just a different perspective. And I know you will enjoy this week's episode. So please welcome my guest, Mr. Cody Clark, here on The Magic Word. Today we are speaking with someone who may or may not be quite familiar to you. He is from Louisville, Kentucky. Actually, I run into this young gentleman frequently whenever I attend the Magi Fest over in Columbus, Ohio. And we have talked on many occasions there and at other conventions then as well, and saying, let's get together for recording a podcast. And we just haven't been able to coordinate our schedules where we can actually sit down for an hour because, as you know, at most conventions, there are so many things going on. It's hard to sit down and to have a proper chat. Well, it's kind of hard even now because he's not home in Louisville. He's actually traveling and doing some library shows around the country. And one of the reasons I wanted to speak with him is because he's on the scale, has autism, and I think it's interesting to talk with different people who have what might be called, quote, disabilities, and how people have varying degrees of disabilities of different kinds, and how they can turn that into an asset and also prove to be successful, and particularly in the career of magic, and talking with people and being with people and interacting with people and being and having autism, basically. Anyhow, a lot of stuff we can get into and talk with. So I'm going to shut up and I'm going to let my friend talk here for quite a while. Hopefully, there he is right now, Cody Clark. Hey there, Cody. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Scott. Coming to you from Clayton County, Georgia. Most of your listeners have probably been there because that's where the airport is, but I'm thankful to be landside for the set of library shows.
Now, usually when people are doing library shows, they're kind of going around their area, but you're traveling around the country. What kind of a niche market have you got there?
Well, I am thankful to be headquartered in Louisville, Kentucky, where I'm born and raised for many reasons, including the Big Magic legacy, one of the best SAM/IBM ring/assemblies in the whole world, not just the country. And Louisville is central to both the Midwest, so I can get as far up as Chicago, and the South, I can get down as far as Atlanta. Summer, it tends to be libraries, but during the school year, I do school assemblies. I do colleges via the APCA circuit, and a lot of your disability advocacy conferences, adult daycares, therapy centers. I would say, in short, education is my niche, mm-hmm. but it's been a good niche because education is so multifaceted that there's always a new lane to go down.
Now, as I understand it, when you are working with the educational services in particular schools, most of the time, don't they require you to have some sort of a theme or something that you are teaching, or some values or something? Is like, you know, with little kids, don't bully or get off drugs or whatever kind of a thing. Do you have to have a theme like that, or is that still something that is necessary?
That is indeed the case. I do come about it from a different angle because my story does often fulfill that. My story mm-hmm. of what it's like to live with autism, personally deal with bullying. So, like, for instance, instead of it being an anti-bullying show, my shows are here's why not to bully. And that is because, hey, that individual with a disability is actually rather cool if you get to know them.
Do you think some people are put off in wanting to know someone because they think, I don't know, for whatever reason? Do you feel like sometimes people think that you are less educated or less intelligent, and so they don't want to pursue a conversation with you? And that's going to be horrible, but is that the case sometimes?
It varies from person to person, and it does vary based off how visible a person's disability is. Hmm. I'm thankful that it's not as much the case as some would think, but of course I do still get that. And that is indeed frustrating, especially when people let their assumptions win out and that influences how they treat you, or if they'll still talk with you, but they'll make it obvious that they think they're a rung above you.
Right.
But that is a big reason I do my different shows, so I can myth bust through magic. Because, I know on your podcast, varying people have different thoughts about how much the public actually likes magic.
Right.
They may not love it as much as we do, but I think they at least like it a lot enough to where it's a good middle ground for people who either are curious about disability or have some prejudices, but they're willing to put them aside to come to a magic show. And then I can use the show to change hearts and minds from there.
So are you using this kind of, I say using magic, I guess, as a crutch, if you will, or something in order to deliver your message, or is it intertwined and aligned closely?
I would say both. I do intertwine it, and I've learned a lot from Jeff McBride at Mystery School and from Trial and Error on how to do that well. You do have to thread the needle just right with cause magic so it doesn't come off as preachy. Or early on, a constructive criticism I got that was rather astute was that my magic felt like a secular version of gospel magic.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Because you were preaching getting along and understanding people with disabilities.
Yeah, and that's all in all a good thing, but people smell when you're trying to make them view things a specific way from a mile away. Mm-hmm. So my strategy with it is, here's my story, here's my perspective, you do with it as you will. And I do vary the routines in my show based on how heavy or light the message is. And I learned this from one of my mentors in Louisville, Brent Braun, who's mentored a lot of people on AGT and Full Us.
Right.
He taught me, after a heavy routine, do a light for fun routine that may not have a message. Give them a break from that first point and then go back and do another message heavy routine.
Oh, that makes sense then too. And good advice from a true professional that knows what he's talking about.
And not just what he's talking about in regards to himself, but from what works and doesn't with literally hundreds of magicians with some mm-hmm. level of success.
Right, right. Well, I like that idea of having a magic with a message, I guess, basically type of a thing. Do you book yourself or do you have an agent that handles you? Or
primarily me. Some markets I have agents because mainly campus activities and corporate kind of require it. Campus activities, there's the conference system, NACA and APCA. Corporate, it doesn't technically require it, but well, most of my marketing is email outreach, but corporate tends to hide their emails well. So you do have to find agents who specialize in corporate that have the connections with like the executive assistants, mm-hmm. wanting for diversity and equity and inclusion committees. I'll often do speeches for those. And I'll often do when they want to do events internally, like bring your family to work day, and they want a sensory friendly component to that.
Right. I would think it'd be difficult to try to balance everything that you've got to do between performing and promoting yourself. That's why I was asking about having an agent, because not only that, but then traveling to all the places that you're going. And I'm sure you're on the phone, probably in the car, talking with people as well as you go.
Oh, it is. You're right. It is a tough balance even still. But one person that's helped me a lot, have you had Jonah Babbins on The Magic Word?
I have not. No.
Oh, he would A, be a good guest, but B, he does the mastermind program. He is one of the big magic business gurus, but he's good at explaining business like your five and giving you systems.
Wow.
So that you know, okay, Monday's when I do emails, Tuesday's when I do follow-ups, and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. And he teaches us about virtual assistants that a lot of small businesses, especially ones that last, use sites like onlinejobs.ph to hire assistants, usually based in the Philippines, to do not all, but most of the admin tasks, so that you get at least a bit more free time on your plate again.
I looked into that myself. There was a book out called The 4-Hour Workweek, I believe it was, which I highly recommend. And it talked about how you try to finally get that down to just doing a little bit. And he talks about, I think it was Your Man in India, YMII, or whatever it is. But talk about virtual assistants, basically, for whatever you want them to do. And they will, different people will have different skills to price at whatever that you need for as much as you need for them to do, to go out and do the marketing for you or make the phone calls for you and everything except book the show or even book the show, whatever. But I know what you're talking about.
It's a very underrated tool indeed. Mm-hmm. Although granted, you are still hiring someone at the end of the day, so you do need to do an interview process and there is training. And it is affordable, but it's still money. So Jonas puts the standard at virtual assistants as if once you start to make 30K a year, then you look to things like that to scale up.
I was just having a conversation with a friend of mine, Kent Cummins, just yesterday, in fact, about this very topic, in which he was asking about my advice of what would be one of my marketing suggestions. And I said, let professionals do what professionals do. You do what you do. And that is the best that you do is to do magic and perform and create and work on your act and everything. And let the professionals design your website, do the SEO, let them be the ones who help to work with your brand, perhaps doing some PR work, making the phone calls, sending out the contracts. I mean, as much as you want them to do, and designing all of the things that you need in order to get the kinds of shows. But again, there are professionals who are PR agencies, for an example. It's going to cost more, but you will make more in the end by letting them do what they do.
And a lot of times I've been learning, especially as I enter my 30s, time is money, that sometimes it is worth spending a little more to gain free time back to work on magic, or as I've now got a 2-year-old niece and a 5-month-old nephew, time to spend with them.
That's great. Well, I agree. That's what you're saying there. It's simple economics of guns or butter. During times of war, you're either making guns or you're making butter. But whatever you're doing, it's at the expense of doing something else. So if you are marketing for yourself, you are designing your website, even though you have the skills to do that, it may not be as good as what some of the professionals are, but it's time taken away from you actually doing your show and preparing for it, you know? So you're right. I like your thinking on that. I was going to go back for just a minute. I can almost hear in my head people saying, why don't you ask them the question when we were back a little bit later, earlier, about whenever you are performing, there has to be a great sense of accomplishment when you perform, because I know there are people in the audience who come up after the show to say, oh, I've got a child or an uncle or brother or whatever who is autistic on different levels or has a handicap of some sort. You have encouraged me I think you would have to have some great stories about that. Can you share a couple maybe?
Oh, I do. I get that all the time. And then there are times where at libraries, I'll get kids making me drawing.
Oh, cool.
I'll get parents saying that they now have hope for their kid. They now know, oh, college is possible. And then a decent amount that get into magic and I can redirect them towards section 793.8. And occasionally, although not substantially large, I'd say I'm doing something right. If libraries are not a market you traditionally get tips, there are 2 or 3 times I've gotten tips from people who've been that move.
Mm-hmm. Afterwards, I'm again sure that you have some advice. You probably, when you can talk one-on-one with some of these parents and some of the children, then as well to encourage them by telling them your story. Do you, in the context of your show, explain your story about how you got started into that, or
it varies based off what exact show they hire. I got the message heavy show, A Different Way of Thinking. I do go into detail there. Then I got a show that's social emotional learning called Your Differences Make You Magical. That's why I'm here in the Atlanta area doing, where I do talk about autism. But since your average kindergartner only knows so much or little about it, mm-hmm. I also include friendship skills and personal resilience and other general life advice. And then, of course, I do the weddings and banquets like everyone else, where the message may not be present at all.
Right. It's just magic, just pure magic. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Now, as I mentioned to begin with, about being on the scale, there are various levels, I guess, in which I understand with autism. Some people don't want to interact or talk or look at someone in the eye. They don't want them to touch them or whatever else. And is that something that you had experienced and got past, or were you on a different level, or...
Well, I'm what you would call the low support needs level. The exact terms change all the time.
I bet.
So by the time this comes out, it may be a whole new set of terms, but there's high support needs, which is what you would think of as like permanently living in a residential facility. Medium support needs, like your Walmart or Kroger greeters that were kind of placed there by their service providers, who can have conversations with you, but not necessarily live fully on their own. Mm-hmm. And then low support needs is me and others similar to me, where we can live independently, go out and about and travel, but there are certainly still difficulties with motor skills, with social skills. And they were indeed more present early on. I was nonverbal till the age of 3. I wasn't potty trained until right before kindergarten. It took me longer to drive. My handwriting's still pretty bad. But I had therapies from the University of Louisville Autism Center that helped make a lot of the early progress. And I do credit magic a lot with the social skills progress, because overall, I was pretty shy until I had the regular social skills practice through magic and the literal feeling that I had something to bring to the social table in a social setting like middle or high school.
So what you're saying, as I understand it, is that the level where you are is buildable, or in other words, you can build on that, or you can, it's an improvement. There are some that just kind of stay at the same level, and you have, like you said, you were mute until you were 3, but you I got some additional skills as you grew older, but some may not ever change. Is that right?
Overall, I would say there's improvements every step of the way. Oh. And I do hear that from the course of my show. There is, and Temple Grandin also says this, obviously, most of your people who are high support needs, I caution never say never, but for the most part, you stay within the basic level, but there are definitely milestones you can make within that level.
Ah, I see. Well, one of the things that was key, I think also you just said a moment ago to me, is how you were embraced by the local Louisville Magic community, by Dr. Bob Escher and others who were there, who had helped you along the way, as most clubs do, encouraging younger adults or children to get involved and teaching them magic. And I'm sure that you had people who guided you at your early age too.
Most certainly. I got into magic when I was 11. I went on a family vacation to Gulf Shores the 1 or 2 years Bart Rocket was down there instead of Branson. He called me up on stage. He let me put the blade in audience dismemberment, which is Jim Steinmeier's audience participation version of sawing a person in half.
Oh, yeah.
That I really like because it's very audience participatory. And to the point where I went from not really knowing what I was to do with my life, what I was good at, to being like, let's try this magic lane. And it was the Louisville Magic Club's fundraiser show, one they still do to this day, that made me leave the Marvin's Magic Kits and realize, oh, there is such a thing. And that would be my advice to magic clubs, do a public show, because if it weren't for the public show, I may not have known there was magic beyond the Marvin's Magic Kit. I imagine lots of kids that would be among our ranks never make the connection, oh, let's search outside this magic kit. But the magic club did that. And from there, I connected with, there was a guy named Bill Custis, who was my entry into the club. He wrote a book on magic with puppets that Samuel Patrick Smith still sells. Then, of course, Bob Escher and David Gerard. I know there's two famous magic David Gerards. I'm talking about the Kentucky Illusionist.
I love that guy. One of the best lecturers I think I've ever heard.
I 100% agree. Even Lance Burton says he's one of the best magicians in Louisville. And that includes Lance, too, because he's come back home for about a decade. But he went to my high school, and he was briefly a Louisville Cardinal, and he's from my end of town. So there were lots of parallels between our paths right away that mean that he means a lot to me.
And Matt King also was from the area.
Oh, yes. Matt King's also from the area. And I've taken a little bit, I would say I combine elements of Lance and Mac, but being more on the comedy path than what you would traditionally think of Lance as. Mac was very artistically influential. Lance was, hey, this idea you had to be a pro magician is very possible. That's where Lance's influence is. Not me doing dove magic per se, but in a kid from the poor white trash end of Louisville, Kentucky is on stage in Las Vegas. Maybe you can be too, Cody.
Yeah, just very encouraging, I'm sure. That'd be great. Were you in college when you decided to turn pro, or at what point did you decide, hey, this is a career for me?
It was partially always an idea, even before magic. Every time I did a sport, I thought I'd be going to the pro leagues in that sport. And I would have sang if I were actually a good singer. And I was into puppets for a year, but middle schoolers strangely hate puppets. And
interesting.
I don't know why, but I was bullied way more for my year in puppets than I ever was as a magician.
Oh, man. Wow. No kidding. I would have thought just the opposite. I would think that they would like puppets. Huh. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Because I think most adults have grown up as a child watching Sesame Street and seeing puppets and other things. But I'm wondering if perhaps it may be tied to the recent phobia for clowns, that people are scared of clowns.
A little bit of that, but I think it's more so in Seriously Silly. Silly Billy mentions middle school is the hardest age to perform for because they're rejecting the things they liked as a kid. Ah. So that's the age of like, ew, Sesame Street, and with that, ew, puppets, and then gotcha. They rediscover their love for them.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, I understand. Wow.
Wait, actually, where was I going with that story? What was the original?
We were talking about leaving college or finishing college and deciding this was a career for you.
It was always vaguely an idea, but college, first day before freshman year, my dad is like, prepare to focus on your degree, which he did support me, but neither of us had an idea how many resources at University of Louisville would be available for me to be a pro magician, like mm-hmm. marketing degree from the business school and them supporting me. And then the theater arts department doing open mic nights within the department, having acting classes and stagecraft classes. I actually felt my U of L education really prepared me well to be a pro. Wow. And I did have some leftover scholarship money to use as the startup fund. So I decided, let's take the leap straight for college.
That's one of the first people I've spoken to who actually almost has a degree in magic. That's as close as you can get, where you have actually structured things for your magic career right from the get-go when you were a freshman all the way through, and then still using that seed money, I guess, or scholarship money to pursue a professional career. That is amazing. The only other one I was thinking of is Doug Henning in Canada, I guess, who had structured a magic degree, and he graduated with that.
But, and Matt King, too, actually. Oh, Matt King. We went in Minnesota.
Okay. Wow. Unaware of that. So
I like the idea of going into it right away, because although I do understand why people make different decisions about being a pro, I like the idea of going straight into it. And then if needed, getting a job, better than getting a job and then having to decide, oh, do I leave these benefits or not?
Right. Yeah. Because you might have some obligations to make, and particularly if you get married and have children, it's like, well, I've got to get something that's going to be a regular income and 401k and medical benefits, et cetera, et cetera. And you have a different set of needs than you do if you're on your own.
Yeah, I thought it'd be better to do this grand experiment right away. And thankfully, a decade later, this is the 10th anniversary of being a pro, and it doesn't seem like it's stopping anytime soon.
And so you are, what, 31 now?
Yes, exactly. I turned 31 about 2 weeks ago, and I actually did a birthday bash show in Louisville to celebrate.
Oh, how fun. That's great. Well, happy birthday. Belated birthday.
Thank
you. By the way, then, too. One of the things before we started chatting on this was about the month of autism. Everything, it seems like, has a month, whether it's Black History or the Pride Month or different kinds of things. And we're going to get around to those in future podcasts to discuss those kinds of things, too. But you said that I was unaware that there are three different months with disability months, et cetera. Go ahead and tell me about that.
Well, there are several different awareness months, which does indeed help with marketing and creating opportunities for shows. March is Disability Awareness Month. Everything related to disability is under that umbrella. And lots of times, of course, there are directly autism conferences and autism orgs, but there is a lot of crossover appeal because the core needs are very similar. Mm-hmm. And there is overlap between diagnoses somewhat. April is Autism Specific Awareness Month. And then October, it's Disability Employment Month, a month focused on efforts to help people with disabilities become successful adults and find jobs, or in that industry calls it adult transition plan.
And do you keep busier in those months doing magic because you are trying to raise awareness?
I certainly do. And what's funny, in the mastermind, everyone else is dwelling on getting gigs in November, December. Mm-hmm. I'm usually empty-ish during those months and can actually do like the hot cocoa and building snowmen stuff. But during March and April, where everyone else is dry, those are some of the months that make my entire business year.
Wow, that's interesting then too. And with those, you mentioned earlier about how that you do some speaking, but then also just do like weddings and close-up or corporate or everything. I would assume that during those awareness months, you are doing mainly just on the stage performing.
Yes, even if they are hiring me just to, well, occasionally I'll do galas, which are a combo of like your banquet, but they're hiring me because of my advocacy.
Sure.
So Jeff McBride's dial up and dial down device applies sometimes even still, because a gala is a drinking audience. The purpose of it, though, is to raise money for the organization.
Explain the dial up and dial down.
Well, it's how heavy or light your messaging is, or even just your patter is, based usually on a good shorthand is how much is the audience drinking, and are they there to see you, or do you just happen to be there?
Oh, okay.
So like a ticketed fringe festival show would be like the most direct form of a dial up show because they're there to see you and it's an intellectual cerebral experience. But your like cocktail party at a wedding or performing at an amusement park, those would be examples of dialed down audiences because they didn't come expecting you. And in the case of a theme park, as theme park performers will tell you, they're really there for the air conditioning, but you have to entertain them or else they'll leave.
Well, that's kind of like a shopping mall. I learned that way on early in my career, that a lot of times you're just a babysitter because the parents will say, hey, I'm going to go shopping and I want my child to sit and watch your show. And they'll just sit and watch them. You do that two or three times. You know, and also people are not necessarily stopping to watch a show. You're like a busker, basically. You're trying to stop an audience. And so, yeah, I understand what you mean, that sometimes people don't care.
That's one reason I do targeted marketing. Generally, I prefer the dial-up audiences.
Sure.
That tend to be where my strength is, because I'm not a routine inventor in terms of method, but I always write my own scripts.
Right, right. When you and I had talked most recently, and it was, I think, at the Magi Fest, do you attend a lot of conventions or because of your schedule, just pretty limited?
Well, Magi Fest is the one I guarantee I go to every year because of its ideal timing, location, and good, consistent quality of the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll go to different SAM conventions. Last year, I made the New Orleans one. I'm going to make a decision soon about the Dallas Combined Convention. I guarantee I make Magi Fest, and then I try to make one additional one a year. And in the coming years, I am hoping to start performing at more conventions or lecturing.
But you have appeared in one or two. It seems like I saw your name on something recently, didn't I?
I've done the Battle of Magicians before, and I've done Kadabra before as an entertainer / lecturer. And I do have a Magic Club lecture.
Well, that was what I was thinking, is it must have been then the Kadabra that I saw an ad for or something that had your picture in there.
Kids show performers are very interested, especially in my sensory-friendly magic shows where I directly modify the presentations or the set list to make it accessible.
Going back to the SAM convention, I just want to give a quick plug for that then as well, because that particular convention, which is called Magic Texas, is a combined convention of the Society of American Magicians, the Texas Association of Magicians, and FISM, as well as the North American Championships of Magic, in which there are going to be competitions for getting to attend and perform and compete in FISM in Torino next year, in Turin, Italy. And so it is important that I think you come to see this, because not only is Mike Miller, who is the talent director, brought in some of the most amazing talent in the world, who are, I think he's got seven different FISM winners, plus another half dozen of those who have been runners up. But aside from all the professional entertainers and people who are coming, with Gabe Blackstone being a guest of honor, I know that the Wilson family and Total, Nan Darnell and Greg Wilson, his brothers, are going to be coming. They're doing a show also on Monday night. But there will be a lot of other magic that you will see that's going to be really professional magic because of the competition that you'll be seeing them doing, not just stage, but also close-up and parlor and mentalism and everything else. So when you normally go to a convention, then you will see just the evening shows and then a competition, and they're both going to be great. Here, you're going to be seeing just a lot more at a higher level and for a lot longer. The night before, by the way, Lance Burton and friends are going to be performing on a Thursday night. So come in early and be sure to get your ticket then for that. Then the convention begins on Friday morning, goes through Monday night. Typically, we're done by Monday noon, but because there's so much going on, it'll be finished Monday night, and so you can head back home Tuesday, plus all the activities in and around the area of Arlington where the convention's being held. So anyhow, just want to make a plug for them.
If I may add, there's also the SAM Youth Academy that they're doing right before, too. I add that because I do some volunteer work with Arlen, and I've just transitioned from social media to new chapter coordinator. So if you know young magicians in your life, that's a good free opportunity for them to get hands-on teaching. And usually they're pretty generous with the free props.
Yes. And I want to talk about that in a second, but just to finish up, I was just going to say, for information on that, go to magictexas.com. that's the end of that ad. And I thank them for sponsoring this podcast. But also, I want to ask you then about working with SAMI. That's the SAM Youth, because they've changed that from the, I think it was SYM, the Society of Young Magicians. Now it's the SAM Young or Youth. And so what is your position or what do you do with them again?
I was doing social media since like the 2020s. I do appreciate that part of my legacy with that is taking them from zero social media to having an Instagram and a Facebook page.
Wow.
But given my busy schedule, I wanted something that wasn't a literal everyday commitment. And also, I like improving the experience of the chapters and of the assemblies of the different magic clubs. So now I'm a new assembly coordinator. So what Arlen sent me a list of a few who just started their assemblies, like Michael Makita started one in Pittsburgh, one in Vegas has started up, and I'll help them with meeting ideas and where to find potential members from.
Mm-hmm. That's an organization that is continuing to grow because it's been fairly new. And I know the IBM has an emphasis towards trying to encourage youth then as well. But I'm glad to hear that the SAM really has been doing that kind of work that you're talking about then as well. I mean, they've got people like you who have grown up with that and you understand the importance of that. I think that that's great. Have you ever worked with camps like at Cannon's Magic Camp or any other kind of a magic camp?
Not magic camp specifically, but I have for different arts councils done like day-long beginner magic classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that being a bit of a funnel to the societies.
And so when you are doing these library shows, do you do any teaching there also, or is it strictly a show?
Libraries is strictly a show. Usually it's the arts councils that want because a lot of arts councils do like summer programming that consists of learn painting this week, learn how to draw this week, learn how to magic this week. And those will include like a 2 to 3 hours of beginner magic from a magic kit, which I get magic kits from a company that Lance recommended to me. Can't remember their name off the top of my head, but they actually do put your graphics in on them. And it's like classics like Cups and Balls, Zigzag Rope. I chose it because it's stuff that almost anyone could do without needing complex motor skills. And then I sense which routine they're learning the best. And then they open for my full evening show. Like the opening act will be a student recital, and then I'll do about 30 minutes of a stage show.
I see. I know you have a niche market area that you've cornered pretty much there, but are there any others who have your unique set of skills who are out there also? And whatever diversity or...
There's starting to be a few that are emerging, like Jordan Allen from Murray, Kentucky. He is also neurodivergent and doing what I used to do and touring the Fringe Festival circuit with a show that's modified for sensory needs and talks about what it's like to live with a disability. And then there's Daniel Schaefer from Newport, Kentucky. He's focusing more on corporate speaking, but he's also neurodivergent, part of the LGBTQ community, and bringing those experiences into his magic. And there's a guy from Ohio named Jake Lindsay who does a lot of summer camps and adult daycares, who's also on the spectrum. It's, I don't know how much can be truly attributed to me, but it is encouraging to see that they even see the clients kind of associate magic as an autism friendly art. It kind of, I told Eric Tate this on the Penguin podcast. It reminds me a lot of how in the 70s and 80s people associated being blind with being good at piano. I think now in pop culture that's happening with magic and autism.
That's interesting. Well, it seems to me, though, again, with my thinking of what little I know about autism, is how there are certain sensory things that they try to avoid. So when you were talking about Fringe festivals, and that's why I was thinking just about doing shows in general, but particularly Fringe festivals where there's so much noise going on that it'd be frightening to some who are on the spectrum.
At Fringe festivals, you're right about the beer tent area, but each show is still in like a theater building, so there is a little bit of separation. But in general, I take out loud noises and remove bright lights. And I also, routines like Miser's Dream, I can't do in a sensory-friendly show. Even though I do have a Miser's Dream, I do in other contexts. And during a sensory-friendly show, I'll do billiard balls as my manipulation routine instead of linking rings. Bright lights, I can't do, especially the really super bright delights that aren't quite Delight brand, but are way brighter than any light should be. I can't do those.
Interesting.
And I have accommodations in the environment too, like a bag of fidget toys. And when possible, I do a separate sensory room or a sensory safe corner, kind of like a lot of pro sports stadiums or Dollywood theme park. They have, like, sometimes despite the best of your accommodating abilities, someone's still overwhelmed. So a popular accommodation is the sensory room or sensory corner, where you can give people a retreat space with back and forth access privileges so they can decompress and then come back when they're ready.
That kind of reminds me, I was not so sensitive to that, their sensitivity, and until I had a show in a hospital some years ago. Jeff Hobson has a routine where you blow up a balloon dog, then you say play dead, and you throw on the floor and you stomp it out and the balloon pops, put it back in the sack, and then when you blow up the sack and then pop it, then the balloon doggy is back again in the sack. That's a trick. And after I had finished the show for this hospital for the children in this area, and I was getting things put up, a nurse came back in, wheeling a child in, and said, we had to leave because of a sensory problem, because when you popped the balloon, it was loud noise, and we had to leave. So she had to go back to the room. Do you mind, could you twist a balloon animal or do something for her? And I said, absolutely. I hadn't thought about that, about some people who are sensitive. I was thinking about the latex, you know, some people can't touch or have problems with certain types of latex or whatever. So have to use a different kind of glove or balloon or whatever anyhow. But I hadn't thought about the loudness or flashing lights that you had mentioned too. There are certain things that I'm sure that you have to change.
Yeah, and that is a common thing I hear. A lot of people don't realize what the differences are until they are in the moment.
Until they're in the moment, exactly.
In general, a good shorthand is consider noises, especially sudden noises, and consider lighting. Those are the two most common sensory triggers.
Well, I don't think much about lighting, because usually the lighting I use is ambient, or I have a spot on me or a couple other lights. I don't have anything flashing, but I would imagine some people who are illusionists might have lights coming out at from behind their illusion, you know, to the audience or whatever. But
yeah, that'd be more common with illusionists or with people doing a Delight routine.
Right.
Or there's certain cell phone routines that have the cell phone flashlight on.
That's true, too. Hadn't thought about that. You're exactly right. When you are performing, do you use a lot of audience participation? Or again, when you're delivering a message, it's mainly just you talking and then doing something in one? Or again,
no, I love audience participation because it really lets the message sink in through lived experience. One of my favorite new routines that's come out of this year is a version of Jay Sankey's earplugs. Jay Sankey, when he put it out, was like, oh, something more common than sponge balls. But for me, it takes on a personal meaning because the gym buzzers were my sensory trigger. So I'd cover my ears and cry in pain until my dad brought earplugs home from Rainbow Bread, where he worked at the time. And I connected that story to the earplugs. And now I can share that story with my participants that I bring up and do sponge balls with earplugs. And as they're being impressed, the lesson sinking in that these tiny accommodations can have a big impact and be very inclusive.
I want to ask you about that particular routine in just a moment, but I remember many years ago, back when we had Walkmans and this CD player that we would carry and have these headphones and little sponge kind of earpieces that went over the ears. Michael Weber had decided that this would be a great thing to use rather than a sponge ball. Just take the sponge off of the earpieces and do sponge ball routines with that. And that was at least 30 years ago. I'm going to say that would have been the 80s, maybe, and 90s. What is it you're talking about? This, I'm not familiar with Jay Sankey's routine.
It's essentially a sponge ball starter kit, but the sponges are shaped like earplugs. Kind of like cylinder cones about the size of my two fingers.
Okay.
And that also leads to different sets of palming moves that you can do that you can't quite do a traditional sponge because it is cylindrical shaped.
Yes. So this is more tubular shaped than, if you will.
Yeah. It's tubular rather than ball shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And you start by taking them out of your ears, and then you do the classic move where you put it in the pocket and it pops back in your ears. And then once you finally have two permanently, then you can do the one in the hand, one in their hand, and then two in their hand. And then I morph them all into one giant earplug.
And then do you pull them out of their ears then also?
Yeah, I can. Sometimes I improv and do stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen some in which SpongeBob routines that Roger Klaus had done a long time ago with having SpongeBalls up the sleeve. So you have somebody's sleeve and you show it's empty, your hands are emptying, then reach back in and pull a SpongeBall out of their sleeve. I guess you could improv like that with those as well, of course.
That's one good thing about magic, like Walt Disney said about his theme parks, they're never complete.
They're never complete. And it sounds like that what you're doing is never complete either. I mean, at 31 and you've made a career of what you're doing now, is there a long-term plan? Have you got a 5, 10, 20-year plan as to where you want to be? What do you want to do?
Well, right now I do feel confident I can keep this career up for my entire life, or at least ability to perform competently.
Mm-hmm.
So my plan next is to do some sort of move into a house or a nice condo. Mm-hmm. That's the next phase of the move. And then I'm hoping to do enough corporate speaking to where I don't feel I have to accept every single thing. I'm starting to go from take everything if you can make it work to being more selective territory. That's mm-hmm. the next big leap as well. And it would be nice to either get on like AGT or Full Us. Not necessarily for the fame, but there's lots of markets that open up once you have that TV proof.
That's exactly right. That's very true. Have you auditioned or tried to audition for AGT?
Not yet for AGT, but as they become nicer to magicians.
Yes.
And as I've heard people say, well, you can never 100% guarantee how they're going to treat you, but a lot of people feel confident that with my advocacy angle that they wouldn't bring me on just to make fun of me. So I think next year I actually am want to seriously try AGT.
Well, that is one of the things about AGT is a lot to do with the backstory. It's not just how good the act is, but it's also where did you come from? How did you get to where you are? Boy, you really got a story that tugs at our heart, and look how far you've come and where you are today. And, you know, they're for you. And just as you'd mentioned, they are becoming much more magician friendly, as evidenced by the fact we've had at least three magicians who have won AGT in the past few years.
Yeah. And a lot of people, I think the increased presence of magic on good TV shows like AGT and Fool Us may well be the best thing to have happened in magic of the 21st century, because mm-hmm. now people understand there's genres of magic. Now we vastly reduced the amount of magics for kids stigma, like I was mentioning with the puppets. Puppets still seem to have that stigma, but people seem to understand magics for everyone. And we've got a lot of people who have consistent magic careers that are within my age range that launched their careers because of time on either of those shows.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely the truth. There are many people who have used that medium of television as a launching pad for their career. And having that on your resume, it doesn't hurt. It adds. It certainly helps. I would agree. I know another one is Masters of Illusion that Gabe Blackstone produces, in which you get to see a lot of different genres then as well, just bang, 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 if whether they're doing close-up or comedy or stage or mentalism or whatever it is, and they pack a lot into a half hour. Whereas really with what Penn and Teller do, it seems they're spending more time and going a little bit deeper into letting you do a full routine and then getting to talk with you afterwards, as opposed to AGT, where they hear your story first and usually you hear it afterwards when you're talking with the host while Penn and Teller are collaborating.
Yeah, they each have their different pros and cons.
Right.
But I think they all bring a unique facet of magic to the table.
Well, doing magic on your local television station, news programs, and your talk shows is helpful, certainly. But being on the Buffalo Morning News, doesn't really sell if you're trying to get a show in Las Vegas. You know what I'm
but
saying?
But it's still fun to do. Like I when I do ticketed shows, and I like when I was doing fringe festivals and my twice a year Cody and Fringe show I do at Louisville, I still seek those out because you don't feel more that whole I've made it feeling. You feel it the most when you're about to be on TV, no matter whether it's local or national.
As we start to wrap up, I do want to talk a little bit about the Fringe Festival, as we'd mentioned that two or three different times. And is there just one Fringe Festival that you typically will perform, and where is that?
I've somewhat retired from the circuit, but the first years of my career, my advocacy show, A Different Way of Thinking, the show that is celebrating its 10th anniversary, was being toured on the circuit at like Indy Fringe, Cincinnati Fringe, Elgin, Ohio, Scranton. There's a few different ones in a lot of cities across America, especially your Louisville and Scranton-sized cities, because like Chicago and New York, they kind of are fringe year-round, so there's not a need for one. And then, of course, your small towns. Like Fringe is usually about weird and eclectic and experimental, so small towns usually aren't about it, but it'll usually be in about your mid-sized towns.
Two larger ones, because the big granddaddy of them all, as I understand it, really is the one in Edinburgh, Scotland, in which I was just talking recently with Dr. Richard Wiseman, who was saying there are 3,000 shows a day. This year, there will be 65 magicians a day performing at the Fringe Festival there in Edinburgh, which is amazing. And it's a whole month, 31 days of August from start to finish. And they have all kinds of venues wherever you can find even a little street corner, or I've heard even some people perform in their car. They'll have people in the front seat who will turn around, look at them performing in the back seat or something, and they'll charge for sitting. I mean, they're trying to find any and every little pocket theater they can, large or small.
Yeah, it's literally inspiring to be among that environment. And at most festivals, the fellow artists are your seat fillers. So I think that's helped me creatively too, seeing lots of good quality theater for free and not just like Broadway, not in terms of like Broadway shows, but in terms of my fellow Fringe shows. I think that's seeing people try to make shows out of their cars or try to make shows about other minority groups that also go unheard in society. It's really inspiring to see all this DIY theater and figure out what I can take from that and apply to my magic.
Well, talking about applying things then to your magic, and also earlier about Penn and Teller Fool Us, of course, they like to see something that's original and something that you have invented and you're performing out of your own creation then, basically. Are there some things that you have taken and not only just made your own, because the way that you can present it, it may be a standard trick, but you put your presentation to it, but is there something that you've taken that standard trick and twisted it around or stood it on its head so that it is new, or is that something that you're working on?
I would say there are certain routines I can make, but I do continue working on this every day. One of my newest routines is a version of McComical, but one thing I learned from Christopher T. Magician's book, A Show for All Seasons, is that jumbo cards plus sticker paper means you don't have to literally use cards to do card tricks. Lately, I've been writing routines about my different road experiences. One of my favorite road experiences is going to Jungle Jim's grocery store in Cincinnati, the world's largest grocery store with a big section of international food. And it kind of looks like a Chuck E. Cheese, but with animatronics of all the different countries.
Wow.
So McComical is, in that context, is the shopping, where everyone first sees five different international items, and then the participant sees all bottles of hot sauce, and then the match is a bottle of Ramune soda from Japan.
Oh, that's clever. Yeah, I like that then too.
So I like the idea of taking my audience with me to one of my favorite places.
Yeah.
And then the Jay Sankey earplugs, even if Jay Sankey is the one to be credited for the earplug shape, that's something that's really authentic to my experience.
Sure. Well, I think that anything that you can relate to personally, and the audience also says, oh, I understand, I can make that leap, and that becomes you and yours. And so it's harder for someone else to take your routine and do it in theirs because it doesn't relate. I mean, it's clever, but it's not me.
That's why I highly recommend Christopher T's book to everyone, because it shows that custom creation magic doesn't have to be expensive, that ultimately jumbo cards and sticker paper will get you a long way. or even just there's mental maps that he can use to come up with ideas for new shows that he presents in there too.
I like mental mapping. I understand. So I would be remiss if I didn't ask you then to give us one or two other stories. You say you've had some things you've been writing down about your life and you're putting together. So what would be another one?
Well, one routine I've had a lot of fun with this summer, you know, Vernet Magic's The Yarn.
Yes.
Well, it's a scent. Most people use it for Build to Impossible Location, but I use it for libraries for a choose your own adventure or confabulation routine in which I have people write down a character, a place they would be, and why that person is there. Mm-hmm. And then they got the yarn at the beginning, one person inside of a gift box. Then at the end, they unravel the yarn and see that in the middle is the tale that they wrote, showing the audience that they're Great. The creators of their own adventure and their own destiny.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, clever.
And then trying to think of another good one. Oh, I do. I got an idea from John Reed. He does card to coil, but I've scaled it up from a regular deck to a jumbo deck. It's mm-hmm. essentially kind of a card lasso, but with a mouth coil instead. And I do it about inner beauty. And instead of blending in, I show the back of the deck, be your authentic self. Then they pick and then they find their authentic self at the very end of this mouth coil.
Oh, that makes sense, particularly for you.
And that one, I'd say that may well be my favorite that I've worked on this year, not really because of the magic, but because of, I always bring up a grown-up and they have no idea what they're getting into. Sometimes grown-ups begrudgingly are like, okay, I'll come up. And then at the end, once they see the message and that sinks in, once the routine progresses, they're like, I was not expecting that experience, but I like it.
It's a good way to end. Yeah. Speaking of ending, I'm going to wrap this up over here by asking my guests, as I always do, about your magic word or what your philosophy of life is.
Authenticity. And that is something that magic seems to lack. It's often called the art of deception, and we get a lot of people, although these are entertaining, that are these conmen personas. But this is one area that music inspires me more than magic, especially blues music and old school country, because they're all about, here's what I'm actually living out. Here's what's actually happening to me. Carrying that attitude into my magic, whether it's an advocacy show or not, has been what I feel has made me different from other magicians. And I think it's an underrated tool. That sometimes the best way to be deceptive is to be vulnerable, to share who you really are, to disarm the audience. So then the fooling part gets easier too.
Wow. That is just inspiring. I hope you use that and say that in your talk.
Oh, good thing we got this recorded so I can transcribe it and always use that.
That's right. No, I like that. Be authentic. So very important. Cody, this has been great. Thank you very much for all that you have done and have achieved and are going to continue to do, I know. And for those of you who didn't know Cody, now you've made a new friend. So when you see him at the Magi Fest or maybe someplace else, perhaps at the Magic Texas this year, you be sure to go over and say hello. And you heard him here on the Magic Word podcast. Cody, thanks very much. I appreciate it, my friend.
This is definitely an honor, and if you all want to get in touch, at Cody Clark Magic, all social media, or CodyClarkMagic.com.
There you go. And if you happen to see that he's going to be in your area, maybe doing a library show or some other having to do with an educational system, check it out. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Cody Clark. This is Scotty out. Wow, really inspiring. Thank you so very much, Cody, for being my guest this week. It has been a delight to have a chance to chat with you, my young man. And I know the rest of the audience who is listening into this episode will appreciate that, too. Again, you can contact Cody through his website, so go check him out. If he happens to be anywhere near your vicinity and performing someplace, he posts his schedule on Facebook from time to time. So if you don't follow him, you should. I want to again remind everybody this is the last week for the contest that we're running for a copy of Richard Wiseman's book, Magic Your Mind Happy. So be sure to go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com and put in your name and email address, and that way you'll have a chance to win a free book that will be autographed to you and sent postpaid by Professor Wiseman. One last thing I want to remind everybody, of course, is to like, share, and subscribe, as everybody always says, and that would certainly help our podcast. We seem to have kind of peaked out at a certain number right now as far as subscribers to the Pod Letter, so I encourage you, if you have not yet subscribed to the Pod Letter, which is just a weekly newsletter letting you know what's happening on the Magic Word Podcast, and if you don't like it, you can unsubscribe. It comes to you through MailChimp, so it's just a quick in and out. It is not something that should be considered as spam. It's just some information about what's on the podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, you'll probably enjoy getting the Pod Letter, because it lets you know whenever we are running contests. You're the first ones to know about it then as well. So please subscribe to the Pod Letter. And also, if you have the financial means of being able to support us, we would greatly appreciate that. If you would go to patreon.com, or perhaps you can donate and you can pledge through PayPal. So if you'll go to the Magic Word Podcast and where it says support us, there will be a little tab there. You can click on that, get more information, and to help us, we would greatly appreciate that. That helps keep the podcast going. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember that the best way to be deceptive is to be authentic, be vulnerable, and share who you really are. So then the fooling part gets much easier. This is Scotty out.